teaching a high school class. So where are we? What's going on in Israel right now? What's happening with the nation? Come on, somebody. Who was here last time? Speak up. Where's the nation of Israel right now? What's happening to them? Yeah, Solomon's kind of made a mess out of things, really. Looking back kind of to a little overview of the United Kingdom, Saul, David, and Solomon were three kings. Each one reigning 40 years. The timing's up here. Actually, that time should be 1040 instead of 1020. Caught on my mistake there. 1040 to 1000, 1000 to 960, to 960 to 920 would be the reigns of Saul, David, and Solomon. And as James said, Solomon came in, and David handed him a nice kingdom, ready to build a temple. And Solomon, God gave him riches and knowledge and everything. And Solomon just blew it all out. And we'll get to another slide about that in just a minute. And then the divided kingdom then, which we're going into today, comes in next. It lasts for about 200 years, from 920 roughly, when at the end of Solomon, which we'll see today, for about 200 years until 721 when the Assyrians came in and took the nation of Israel captive. So about 200 years in the divided kingdom. We'll cover half, two-thirds of that this quarter, and then the next quarter gets the rest of that. So Solomon was the king, last king of the United Kingdom, Saul, David, and Solomon. And Solomon, wealth was just unknown. It says silver was like stones. There's just so much of it abounding out there. He had maximized the land size. David had captured all the nations around them, or at least subdued them, so the territory was great. And Solomon was given all the wisdom, but he got all these wives. 700 wives, 300 concubines, and these foreign wives brought in their idols, and it turned Solomon's heart away from God. And all this pagan worship. Yeah, the temple was still there. And it was still in its glory height because Solomon just built it. But he built high places all around for the gods of all these wives he had. And it brought in his downfall. He turned his heart away from God. If you look at 1 Kings chapter 11. So, because of this, God says, I'm going to take the kingdom away from him. I'm going to take the kingdom away from Solomon and his descendants, his line from there. But, he had made this promise to David. We'll go through that and talk about it more in just a minute. He had made this promise to David about his kingdom, his lineage lasting forever. I'm going to say some slides on that in a minute. So because of that, when the kingdom splits and divides, part of it's kept for the family of David. And that's the division we'll look at today, and it goes on in through the quarter. So, 2 Samuel chapter 7. I don't know if you remember that from a quarter before when we had it in the first part of the United Kingdom session. Let's go back and look at 2 Samuel chapter 7 for just a minute. God, it is a key prophecy that comes into play at this point here. Nathan's prophecy to David in the first part of 2 Samuel chapter 7, maybe the most important or key part of the whole 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, that whole territory there. And it's referenced by other Old Testament writers, by New Testament writers, particularly in Acts chapter 2. And we'll see always the book of Revelation in a minute, where it comes into play. So, God, David wanted to build God a house. Wanted to build a temple. But God says, no, I'm going to make a house for you. I'm going to build you a house, David. And as he gets to that promise, and we talk about it here, it's going to become a twofold promise, both physical and a spiritual. The physical side is, he said, when your days are gone, when you're dead and gone, your son will come up and he will build me a house. Speaking of Solomon, his physical son, he will build me a physical house. God said, I'm going to establish your throne, David, forever. There's a lot of key words in that chapter on the word forever. And he said, I'll be his father and he'll be my son. And now we're getting into the spiritual side of it. Looking at Christ and his kingdom that would last forever. Okay? The last line on there, David's house, his kingdom, his throne will be established forever. Not the physical throne, but the spiritual throne through Christ. The kingdom, the church. So, to kind of summarize it. God did not permit David to build him a house. No, your son will do that. But rather, I'm going to build you a house. And that house will have two parts. There's a physical side, there's a spiritual side. That physical side will be your physical descendants through Solomon, who will build a temple, the physical temple in Jerusalem. And your descendants, David, will sit on the throne forever. That lineage then comes all the way through Christ, and who's now reigning king forever. The spiritual side of that is this part here, the kingdom of Christ. The temple of God is the Christians, and where is our dwelling place? The new Jerusalem, not the old physical Jerusalem there. So that's kind of what 2 Samuel 7 is all about. So this promise to David that his lineage would stay in existence comes into play as we get into the divided kingdom here. And even all the way through the book of Revelation, Christ is talking about the line of the tribe of Judah. Again, the lineage of Christ coming through David. So, going back to our lesson now, if we look at that and how it comes into play with a split here, even God had told Solomon, I'm going to take it away from you, but there'll be a peace left because of your David. So, how's the kingdom going to divide? Well, Solomon's son, Rehoboam, will get part of it. And Jeroboam, and we go with these names, they're going to sound alike, and some others going to get really alike before we get through the quarter. But Rehoboam's in the south, and he has two tribes, Judah and Benjamin, and Jeroboam then gets the 10 tribes in the north, the nation of Israel. So we're going to watch that split now as we get into this divided kingdom. All because Solomon and his unfaithfulness and turning away because of his wives. Divided kingdom, as I said earlier, is going to last about 200 years. About 920 to 720, or 921 to 721, roughly. When Israel comes and falls to Assyria, they'll come in and capture the nation and carry them off into captivity, and they are gone forever. They never come back as a nation again. Once Assyrians take them off. So when they're taken into captivity, that's going to leave Judah as a very, very small, very, very small kingdom compared to what it was at David's maximum and when Solomon gets the kingdom. And they're going to fall then later on to Babylon in 586. So that's kind of the future of the kingdoms out there. Now, how do things go for people during the time of the divided kingdom? Well, it's not unlike other times. Okay? What does obedience bring? God says, if you obey me, if you do my commandments, then what? Blessings. Okay? God's going to give you his blessings as long as you obey him and do his commandments. But the other side of that is, non-obedience, sin, turning your back on God, is going to bring what? Same thing it did during the day of the judges, same thing it has all along. Sin, turn your back on God, and curses and punishment comes. And that's what we're going to see all through this divided kingdom time. Now think about the two kingdoms, Israel in the north and Judah in the south. There will be no good kings in Israel through their entire 200 years. There's no king that follows God in the north in Israel. None. In the south, there are some. Say there are a few, there are several, there are not many. There are some who are very, very devoted to God and do what he wants. Some start out good and turn bad, some start out bad and turn good. We'll see some of that as we go through here. So, getting into the narrative a little bit. After Solomon's death, Rehoboam, they come together at Shechem. I got a couple of maps we'll see here in a minute. They come together at Shechem, which is kind of in the middle of the country, for the purpose of making Rehoboam king. Solomon's dead. His son Rehoboam's going to take his place. Jeroboam is going to come into play. Now, Jeroboam has been told by a prophet, Ahijah, separately, privately, that God's going to give you 10 of the tribes. He took a new garment he was wearing, tore it into pieces, 12 pieces, gave him 10 of them. He said, this is God's signal, sign to you, that you're going to get 10 of the tribes. That was a private thing between them. They're out in the country together. Now, Jeroboam had fled to Egypt to escape Solomon. And when he heard that Solomon had died and that Joab, the commander of the army, had died, was dead, he came back to Israel. Actually, he had married the sister of the queen of Egypt, and the Pharaoh tried to get him to stay there. Actually, he wanted to go back. So if I got my story right, maybe mixed up with somebody else. Anyhow, but he had come back in to Israel. So when Rehoboam calls them together, Jeroboam's there to act as a spokesman for the people. Kind of the opposing party is going to turn out to be here. So he comes to that. So the people asked Rehoboam, lighten our load. Your father has been most unmerciful to us, with the burden he's put on us, with the taxes, tribute, the forced labor, things that Solomon had done, this great big kingdom he's got. And it's not unlike what God had prophesied to him way back in the day of Moses. It's going to happen when you get the kings up there. That's what's going to happen. You're going to take your young men and make them servants. That's what's happened. So people are asking Rehoboam to lighten their load, undo some of the taxes, and let up on us. So Rehoboam says, okay, give me 3 days to think about this. 3 days to decide. So he goes to some of the older advisors. Those who would be older than he is, ones who advised his father Solomon. And he asks them, what should I do? And they tell him, lighten up. Lighten the load. Listen to the people. Reduce their taxes. And they will serve you. We'll come back to that. Excuse me. Back to that point here in a minute. Reduce their load, and they will serve you. Then he went to some younger men, some of his peers, if you will, and asked them what you should do. Got their advice. And they're about the opposite. Increase it. Show them you're in charge. He took the advice, thought about it, and goes back to the people. He takes the advice of the younger men. He goes back and tells the people that a finger will be thicker than my father's thigh. He chastised you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions. But you ain't seen nothing yet. Basically, what he's to put it in just blunt terms. You think it was bad under Solomon, my father. I'm going to make it that much worse. Well, what's the people going to do in a case like that? They got two choices. One is to submit, and one is to rebel. And that's what they did. Okay? That's what they did. So, rebellion at the news. Adoram was over the treasury. Rehoboam sends him out to collect his taxes. What do the people do to him? They stone him. They kill him. And this statement here from Matthew Henry's commentary kind of, to me, fit in and puts things in perspective here. It is the sending of Adoram to collect the taxes when the public mind was in such a state of fermentation. That's not a word we use every day. This kind of thing means disarray or turmoil. With another proof of Solomon's folly and his inability to govern. Why, after you had just told the people that you're going to increase their taxes and they're starting to rebel against you, would you send the tax collector out and start collecting taxes? Now, don't you know that something bad's going to happen? Well, they did. They killed him. They stoned him to death. That's part of this rebellion against Rehoboam. So now the split is coming. Judah, the southern kingdom. The king will be Rehoboam. He's going to reign 17 years. He is evil. He's not one of those good kings in the south that we'll see coming on. He's there because of the remnant of the house of David. Prophecy back in 2 Samuel 7. He has two tribes, the tribe of Judah and Benjamin. Capital's in Jerusalem, where David was. It's the southern kingdom. And the temple's there. And the temple is still dedicated to Jehovah, to God. I mean, God's worshiping him like he ought to be, but the temple's still there. That's in contrast to what happens in the north, in Israel. So we've got Judah in the south, Israel in the north. Jeroboam's the king there. He's going to reign 22 years. We'll start watching these kings come and go. Some are going to reign a matter of days, some several years. So Jeroboam reigns for 22 years. He is evil. That's just a given. All the kings of the north are evil. None of them follow God. He has 10 tribes. That's prophesied, the hides of the prophet. He's going to make his headquarters in Shechem. I'll see the map in a minute, see where that is. And he is, of course, the larger of the two kingdoms. Much more territory, more tribes, whatever. So Jeroboam in the north with 10 tribes, Israel, Rehoboam in the south with 2 tribes, Judah. So, look at the maps. This is a couple of them here. It's a little hard to see because of having to be spread out so much. But I wanted to show this one to show the dividing line. So, right across the top of the Dead Sea, right here, it's where it's going to divide. Now, we'll zoom in on this in a minute. But here are the kingdoms around over here. Shechem fell up here in the middle of Israel. And Jerusalem, of course, right at the top of the Dead Sea there. And Judah. So, take that now, zoom in a little bit, look at them. Looking at Israel again here. And Shechem is right down here, right between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. Almost kind of in the middle of the territory here. We got circled here, Dan and Bethel. Dan and Bethel. Before, backing up a slide, when you would talk about the top of the land to the bottom of the land where the kingdom was together, you talk about going from Dan to Beersheba. Here's Beersheba and Dan to the very top. So the entire length of the land was Dan to Beersheba. Well, now, with it divided, it becomes Dan and Bethel. Here's the dividing line right here. So Bethel's right at the southern, right at the southern point. Dan's right at the very north. And that's where the calves are going to be. We'll get to that part. So here's another look at the land. I get more the topology of the land. Oops, we're in here. And same thing. Here's Dan way up in the north. Here's the Sea of Galilee. Bethel down here, little dotted line here, that's the division between the north and the south. And Shechem is right here. Right between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, right in the middle there. And zooming in more to that territory a little bit here. Oops. Here's Shechem again. Here. Not up here where the arrow's pointing. Down here. Here's Bethel. Here's a line between the north and the south. And then Jerusalem down here in the south. So, it's the southern kingdom then, back my first map. And then we'll zoom in on it a little bit. Here's Jerusalem, right up here in the north, at the top of the Dead Sea. There's the dividing line. And Bethel right in the very southern part there of the land. So it gives you a little layout of how the land divides up. So again, Israel had no good kings, and clear. Judah had some blessings during obedience, curses and chastisement during sin, and that lesson's driven home over and over and over and over and over. And that's going to be the story of this whole quarter, the divided kingdom. Is Israel, no good kings, Judah had some, the ones that followed God in the south got blessings, the ones that didn't, and the north all the time were chastised and problems, and that's going to see that over and over and over repeat itself. The good kings were blessed, and the evil kings were not. I've got to fix that in here. Evil kings had the consequences. Okay, the text for the quarter, some of the sheets I passed out. First and Second Kings cover the activities of the kings of Israel, mainly. Now, there's some overlap between the two, but primarily, First and Second Kings will cover the activities of Israel, the northern kingdom. Second Chronicles, the activities of Judah, the southern king. Again, there's references between the two back and forth as they tie together. But that's the basics of the quarter there. Lots of names, lots of events going to be going on here. The Lord talks about that important link between 2 Samuel 7 and Christ flowing through the southern kingdom here, the lineage there. So every king will be a follower of the successor. The dynasty will continue. Not so in the north. Dynasties can be one king long or several kings long, but they'll come and go, but not true in the south. And many of the lessons we're going to see there are going to apply to us. And your teaching, of course, one thing we try to drive home all the time is we're not just studying the narrative. There's things there to learn. We'll talk about those. Okay. Anything on the overview before we get into one more point here? Anybody got anything? That's kind of an overview of what the divided kingdom looks like. All right. Let's see 1 Kings chapter 12 for just a minute. And the first part of this is where the older men are given the advice to Rehoboam about lightening the load. And as they talk to him about backing off part of that load, part of that burden that Solomon's put on the people. They tell him in verse 7, they spoke to him saying, if you will be a servant to these people today and serve them and answer them and speak good words to them, they'll be your servants forever. What is strange about that verse? Yeah, who is serving who? Usually the people serving the king, and that's what the last line of that verse says. They'll be your servants forever. But what these old men, this wisdom, what they tell the king? If you'll be a servant to them, you think about a king being a servant to the people he's king over? That's not something that normally we think about very much. The king is serving the people. Now, you think about that a minute. What comes to your mind? Or who comes to your mind? Obviously he does. What's said about Christ, our King? Christ said, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to what? But to serve. That's our King. He said, I didn't come to serve, but to serve. Now, do we serve our King? Do we serve Christ? Sure we do. He said, I came to serve. What did he do in John chapter 13? To show that. What did he do to his disciples? Wash their feet. The king on his knees, washing his feet. Our king did. Strange for our thinking. So let's think about pulling that home just a little bit. You ever seen a politician? When he's about to be, or want to be reelected, it's been my privilege to, what, for the last 4 years? At least to serve. Okay? Well, he's, in some way, our ruler, if you will, a little bit there, politicians. And yet, it's very common for us to talk about the politician serving the people who elected him, right? Put him in office. Had an opportunity one time to shake hands with President George Bush. And of course, it lasts all 30 seconds. But what are you going to say when you walk up to his former president? He was in. What are you going to say you walk up to the president? Mr. President, I appreciate what you've done for us. Mr. President, I appreciate the service you gave us. I mean, something along that line, maybe. Basically, what I said, he said, it's in my privilege, with his words back, which I'm sure is a canned phrase to him. But we look at our president as serving, as being able to serve us. That's kind of high up here. Let's bring down another notch here. It's about the family. Who rules in the household? Who has responsibility roles in the household as a ruler? The king or the queen of the house? Hey, mom, dad, you have any service for your kids? Aren't we all somewhat in a servant role in our households, even though the parents are there as the rulers, if you will, in the household? So think about Rehoboam being a servant king. It's not totally foreign if we bring it down to some of the things we see in our life today. About the church. Hebrews 13 say about elders. They tell people to do. Obey those what? How they rule over you. So elders in the church have a ruling responsibility. And yet, how many times have you heard the word serve used with elders? I think it applies to deacons as well. Deacons don't rule in the same way that the elders do. But they have a leadership responsibility, and yet they are, by the very nature of their name, servants. How about in our church family, not our physical family? We talked a lot this year about our family here. How many of us are servants one to another? I came to serve. Most of us have some leadership role. It may be older showing the younger by example. It may be some of the younger with younger children. It may be whatever the role is. But we have a leadership role of some kind, either by example or otherwise. And yet we're to serve one another. Anybody got any thoughts about this? Am I off base somewhere? Take an example here of Solomon, of Rehoboam, and we think it's kind of foreign to see a king told to serve the people. And yet, exactly what Christ did for us. I came to serve. It's what people in leadership roles in our country do. It's what we do in our family. The leaders serve. So we do in the church. The leaders serve. I got a thought. I had a quiet bunch this morning. I feel like I remember that from about a quarter ago. Quiet bunch. Everybody speak it up. Mike, what's on your mind? Speak up. I think that's my last slide. So, anybody have any thoughts about the introduction of what we talked about or the application of role of us taking the example of what they told these older, wiser men told Rehoboam about being a servant to the people and how we serve in our various leadership roles?
Yeah.
God had told them all the way back in the day of Deuteronomy, in the day of Moses. God told them through Moses, when you get into the land, you sell it, and you, if you want a king, then he's going to take your vineyards, he's going to take your land, he's going to take your young men to be his servants, to run before his chariots. All this has been prophesied. It's exactly what came into play when they asked for a king. And like Freddie said, that's what they'd been like under David and what it'd been like under Solomon. And he had taken and taken and taken. That's why they wanted the load lifted here. And these older, wiser men told Rehoboam, lighten the load. Stop some of this. Of course, the younger men said, no, make it worse. That's what he tried to do. They didn't listen to this verse here. The verse we talked about being a servant king, that's not what Rehoboam did. He didn't take that advice. So I think it's a lesson that we can learn from here. David's talked about over and over, and I just got through doing David with the high school class back here. And all the things David did. There's one verse that says David served the Lord faithfully, except in the case of Uriah the Hittite. They had him killed because of the Bathsheba thing. So David was very much a God-centered servant and used the people and tried to get from Nabal bread for his men and things like this. Looked after his people very much so. Okay, look at your little schedule for next for Wednesday night and see what's on it as far as what to prepare for. We'll get into Rehoboam and Jeroboam. Jeroboam will set up the calves and Dan and Bethel. And as you read through it, what he's going to tell about these. These calves are what? These are the gods that did what? That brought you out of Egypt. Think about that crazy phrase as you read through this. Prepare for Wednesday night. Jeroboam sets up his calves at Dan and Bethel. So we'll look at Rehoboam and Jeroboam as they get started in their separate kingdom. We'll jump back and forth, the lesson does, between what's happening in the south, what's happening in the north, what's happening in the south, what's happening in the north, and how they intertwine. First thing you're going to see is a war. Almost. So I'll read about it. Almost a war between the two of them. Okay. Thank you.